The Supreme Court has extended its term into July for the first time since 1996. Today, the court made major rulings banning cell phone robocalls and allowing states to punish faithless electors. That's members of the Electoral College who would go against the popular vote of their state. But there are still several much anticipated cases that are outstanding. So, to give us a rundown on this important week for the court, we have WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, Tiziana.
It's Monday. Apparently, I can't speak well, so sorry about that, Kimberly.
We all suffer from it.
Try to get our way. Exactly. And it is July, and here we are talking about waiting for more rulings or even hearing about rulings from the Supreme Court today. How did we get here?
Yeah, the coronavirus affected the Supreme Court like it affected all of us. It's not since the 90s that the court's term has extended past the end of June. Usually that's the benchmark for the ending of it. But at the height of the pandemic, the court had to pause having oral arguments and close its building for several weeks. And then ultimately, usually the court wraps up arguments in April, by mid-April, but they had to end up having arguments take place in May for 10 of its cases to finish all of its work. So by pushing that out by about a month, that's causing them to go out and it take them a little longer to finish writing all the remaining opinions.
And the telecom part was unprecedented as well, right? That was brand new.
It really was. I mean, there has long been a push to have the court broadcast its arguments live, and it's refused to do so, but it was forced to because they did the arguments via conference call with the attorneys in the cases, and it was broadcast on C-SPAN and other news organizations. So that was very different, and we'll have more conversations in the future about, well, now that that's, you know, that has been done, is it going to happen more in the future?
All right, so two cases today. The one I want to focus on first is faithless electors, which seems particularly important in an election year. Can you kind of give us the background? What was at issue in this case?
Yeah, so about two-thirds of states in the country, including Massachusetts, have laws that require electors, members of the Electoral College, to vote according to the popular vote within that state. And about 15 of those laws, including two at issue in this case, have some sort of enforcement mechanism, some sort of penalty that the electors will face or that they'll be replaced. And it was a challenge to the constitutionality of those laws penalizing electors. The Supreme Court found unanimously that states can pass laws that force electors to vote according to what the voters say. Elena Kagan, writing for the court, said both the Constitution and history back that up. She talked about the famous election between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr, how that ended up in a tie and the chaos that ensued. Of course, she had to do a mandatory reference to Hamilton, which many of us watched over the weekend, and also to the TV show Veep. So she had a little fun with it. But in the end, states can enforce these laws.
Is this something particularly important? Will it have tangible effect on 2020? We're in a presidential election year.
Yeah, you know, it's unclear how much of an impact it will have on 2020. If it's close, then yes. I mean, what one reason why this decision was unanimous, I think, was because both Democrats and Republicans, this is one of those rare issues that they agreed on. Both parties wanted to be able to really force their electors to vote according to the votes of the people, because if not, in a close vote, it can really result in chaos, right? If you have a handful of electors who decide to go rogue, so to speak, and cast their votes any way that they wanted, it could have a big impact on the outcome. So maybe this year will be that close. We'll have to wait and see, but it certainly could cause some problems in the future.
So five cases still outstanding. One in particular people are really watching for, right?
Yes, people are waiting to see if President Trump will have to release his financial records in compliance with subpoenas issued both by New York State and by the House of Representatives. This case is a big deal, not just because it may allow us to see finally President Trump's tax returns, but also it tests the limits of executive power, the power power of the presidency. The president is essentially saying because he is president, he can stop Congress and he can stop federal prosecutors from executing a duly authorized subpoena that otherwise would have to be adhered to. So it's a big deal in a lot of ways.
All right. So one more question about the court. There's a rumor from conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt that Justice Samuel Alito is mulling retirement. About a week ago, Washington Post reported that Justice Clarence Thomas, quote, is privately seen by Trump's aides as the most likely to retire this year, end quote. Any truth to either of those speculations?
There is no fact that has been put out by any justice indicating any intent to retire. In fact, Clarence Thomas has repeatedly said that he will not. What this is possibly messaging. Every election year, we hear about the rumble, will a justice step down? The same thing happened with Ruth Bader Ginsburg at the end of President Obama's second term. It's sometimes wishful thinking, particularly if, and in this case with Hugh Hewitt, it's posited by someone who is on the same side and perhaps wants to see Alito retire, but there's no indication yet that that will happen.
Okay, before we let you go, I do want to talk a little bit about the president. He spoke twice over the holiday weekend, once at Mount Rushmore, again at the White House. Here's President Trump in front of the White House on July 4th.
We will never allow an angry mob to tear down our statues, erase our history, indoctrinate our children, or trample on our freedoms.
That represented a theme that he struck both days, really taking on the media, sort of a nondescript left that he was standing against. We talked a lot last year at this time, Kimberly, about the politicization of the 4th of July. What's the response today in Washington to the president's comments and whether they were appropriate for a president on the 4th of July in a presidential address?
Well, lucky for Republicans, Congress is out for a two-week recess, so they weren't asked about these comments by reporters on the Hill. But, you know, the president has been digging deep in this race-based cultural war leading into his reelection bid. As part of his reelection bid, it's sort of an extension on one hand of comments that he's been making really about these monuments in this way since Charlottesville. But it's also a fact that he had intended to run on the economy, and the economy is not doing so well. So he seems to be doubling down, tripling down on this sort of division, fueling this cultural division as part of his reelection bid. And it was another example of that this weekend.
The president also said over the weekend, and I'm going to paraphrase here, that 99% of coronavirus cases are totally harmless. That's also obviously caused some stir. Any reactions that you're hearing to that? Again, understanding that Congress is not in session right now.
Right. Well, it's untrue. Over the weekend, even the president's own FDA commissioner had to say that that was not true on the Sunday shows. Just sort of that the fight that within the own administration of trying to message and say things that are true against things that the president says that are in fact not true. It has been tough. The president certainly wants the coronavirus to go away and wants it to be less dangerous and less deadly than it is. But there is no science behind that assertion.
And we are in an election year. Anything from former Vice President and presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden on all of this?
Yeah, so Joe Biden was striking a much different chord over the holiday weekend. You know, he talked about sharing in the American dream and a battle of the soul of the nation. It sort of sets up the different messaging that you're going to see from both of them until the election about what their vision of America is. And I think we'll hear a lot more of that from the vice president in the months ahead.
All right. That's WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins. I appreciate you being with us today, Kimberly. Thank you.
My pleasure.